B. Mitch Finley, 106.7 The Fan. When you hear Ozzy, means we're going hard. Means we're talking to our boy Neil Greenberg via the Rude Guest Hotline. What up, Greenberg? How you doing, man?
I'm doing super. How are you?
You staying dry?
I'm trying to. I had to get out of the car earlier today, and my little one kept asking for an umbrella.
Dude, I had to walk the girls into school today. It was a scene. I want to start with hoops with you. What, if any, level of surprise are you by the Knicks-Pacers series?
You mean in how lopsided it's been?
Yeah.
I'm surprised, but I'm not completely surprised. I thought the Knicks would certainly be better. But I think obviously they were only at one win away from each other in the standings. So the fact that there should be some competitiveness there. The Indiana Pacers are a surprise. But they're making it happen. And, you know, I think especially when we're looking at, like, just win-loss records in general, I don't know how much you could take those at face value, because you have the Hornets and the Wizards of the world that aren't really, and the Jazz that really aren't trying to be competitive. So that inflates some of the win totals. But I am surprised. I thought New York would play a lot better on home court, especially. I didn't think that they would be, I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but there's certainly been some games that, you know, they should have won that they didn't. They're getting outplayed for sure,
yeah.
But out-hustled and just overall losing to a better team that appears to just want it more, right? I mean, like, that's,
yeah.
I don't really know how else to say it. I mean, it just, Indiana does not give up. And they just seem like they are completely focused on the task at hand.
Where does the discipline and, like you said, the lack of turnovers play into some of the betting aspects? Because when I'm looking at these two series, I'm looking at two teams that are very disciplined and two that are not.
Yeah, I mean, you get suckered into what they call the zigzag effect, which is, you know, you think the parity is closer than it is. So you think that they're going to bounce back, so you start betting the money line. I saw some money line bets, big money line bets on the Knicks in the last game. But at some point you have to look at what's happening on the court, and it's just hard for New York to get their stuff together. So, yeah, I think it's hard to bet on the underdog in the NBA in general. And I do think that you need to understand that even though the Knicks may have looked better on paper, I would say after the first, definitely after the second game, they were certainly the underdog in this series.
Yeah, I think Halliburton's just so good, too. I think the Pacers play, like, way more fluid basketball. I think the Knicks are almost trying to play, like, that late 90s, like John Starks and Charles Oakley stuff. Obviously, the game has changed a lot, but they just want to slow it down. Do you think anybody's touching OKC, though? Because I don't.
No, I don't. I'm a little worried about what the finals are going to look like from a viewership standpoint. I mean, these are, you know, Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers, while it's great for parity in the NBA, you get new champions, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, these are pretty small media markets. I think they'd be like the smallest in modern NBA history. The Thunder aren't really getting a lot of viewers. What was it, like 5 million in the Timberwolves series at one point, one of the least watched conference final games of the past decade. I'm wondering how much buzz this finals is going to have if it is OKC and Indiana.
Oh, dude, I think for the people that do the ratings discussion, it could be a field day for them, because OKC.
And if the Knicks pull this out, could you imagine like the tinfoil hat conspiracy theories that's going to go about if like the refs are involved in any way?
I had people call me last night and say that.
Yeah, that like that would be the worst case scenario, I think, just from an overall narrative arc. If somehow like the Knicks got any help in any way from calls, even if the refs, you know, just completely missed it, honest mistakes, whatever. If they somehow squeaked their way in, that would be something we'll be talking about for a long time.
Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can follow Neil Greenberg at N Greenberg. Check out all his work for the Washington Post. Greenberg, the Post came out with something interesting yesterday, the polling about the growth in popularity of the Commander's name, and I don't think it should be that hard to figure out. They won a bunch of games and have a star quarterback, so more people are into it. Can you help people, though, understand? I'm not saying you were a pollster on this, but you understand statistics and samples and stuff. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, man, they only talked to 1,600 people. That's not fair. How does polling work when you generate a sample to show a larger body?
Well, they're just taking a subset, right? They're looking for a small subset that reflects the larger population. And look, I'm sure Emily Guskin and her crew would want to talk to literally tens of thousands of thousands of people, but that's just not practical. It would take too long. It's too expensive. So what pollsters do is they try to get a cross section, and then they give you a standard of a margin of error. What they're saying is, we acknowledge that these results are not absolute because of the sample size. Here is kind of like the error. So in this case, I think it was like 3 percentage points or so. And what that tells you is that it could be higher by as much as 3% or lower by as much as 3%, but it gives you a good idea of how people feel about the name. And, you know, this is found in political polls, it's found in focus groups, and, you know, et cetera. I mean, this is how it's done, and the science behind it is that you have a good enough cross-section that you can feel comfortable sharing the results and also letting people know that it's not perfect. But I think the results are pretty overwhelming in favor of winning cures a lot of what's wrong with any franchise. And the fact that people were kind of down on the name and now they don't really care as much about the name, you know, the only thing that really changed was Jaden Daniels came in here and did what he had to do and the team started winning some games.
I totally agree. Are you surprised by some of the pushback, or do you just think when it comes to this name discussion, it's just chaos at all corners?
No, I think that I even said as much. I was saying that if this team starts winning under the new ownership, people are going to care less about the name. Like, there's just, when you're losing, you just find something to latch on to that you don't like, and it just gets magnified. And, you know, let's face it, I think the rollout of the name with the logo and everything was underwhelming. And in hindsight, I think, you know, they probably do it over. I'm sure if there was a quick fix, Harris Group would have it changed. But, you know, again, I mean, there's just bigger fish to fry. And, you know, now everyone's concerned about how does this team take the next step in the accelerated rebuild, not so much what are we going to call this team.
Agree with that, man. So, you know, as kind of football is heating back up here, at least OTAs and fans are getting excited, and it inevitably kind of drives the conversation. Where do you think Washington is at going into this phase, and knowing they've really tried to beef up their O-line and knowing there's still real questions on the D-line?
I think they're a top 10 team in the National Football League. I think that they deserve to be considered in the top third of the league at the very least, an above average team. Until they show otherwise, they've made some improvements. You know, we're not going to know exactly what the product's going to look like until they start playing for real. But I do think that the optimism that a lot of people are showing, both fans and the betting markets, is warranted. Right now, it looks like they have Washington as a 3 points per game better than an average team on a neutral field. The only teams ahead of them are Detroit, Kansas City, Buffalo, Philadelphia, and Baltimore. That's some pretty heady, you know, I don't think you can necessarily make a case that they would be ahead of any of those teams, but those are legit Super Bowl caliber teams. The only thing that I'm really looking forward to seeing is how they acquit themselves with the tougher schedule. And, you know, as I said before, I think 10 wins against this schedule is an improvement over 12 wins over last year's schedule. And I think as of right now, you have to look at them as one of the contenders in the NFC for the Super Bowl.
If you were to look at this team and think anything that could make them have to, that make them, that's going to be tough for them and make them have a tougher season than people think, what would that be?
Well, can defenses figure out the offense? Right now, it's going to look a little bit different with Deebo Samuel, but I think Washington did a great job of camouflaging what they were trying to do. There was a lot of deception at the line. Jaden Daniels obviously has, you know, makes defenses think twice as to what's going to happen. If they can continue that, I think that's fine. If defenses are able to counteract that, then I think Washington will have a little bit of an issue because the defense isn't as good as the offense is, and they do have to make up for the defense. I think they are going to be like in track meets of sorts where they're going to need to put up a bunch of points. The offense is going to need to be working. So if for some, you know, if somehow the defenses figure it out, then that could be a problem. But I think that, you know, aside from injury, I feel pretty comfortable with Washington going in and, you know, letting them build on what they had last year.
Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here on the Rude Guest Hotline. If it ain't rude, it ain't right. Check out their HVAC equipment, the most reliable in the DMV. You can follow all of Greenberg's work at the Washington Post. Dude, I did want to switch it up a little bit. When you look at – B. Mitch and I, we've been going around the NFL a lot this time of year, kind of talking to different teams. And yesterday we had a Falcons reporter on. It's clearly Michael Penix's show down there. Where do you think Kirk Cousins ends up?
I think that he's going to be like – the reliable backup, right? I mean, and, you know,
he stays.
Well, someone's got to want him, right? And the only way someone's going to want you is if they know that you can play and they want to see you out there. No one wants, like, a malcontent. And I think after what we've seen with, like, Aaron Rodgers in New York, I think, you know, that's going to kind of cloud some of that. But I will say this, I've been looking at the numbers on this, I think the QB2 on teams have become a lot more important because they play more games. So whether that's because the guy that you have gets injured or doesn't work out, etc., like, you can't afford to go from a QB1 that's really good to one that's really poor, because we've talked about this before too, like, an average quarterback in the NFL is worth a lot to get average quarterbacking. So I do think there's going to be a lot of interest in Kirk Cousins if he does end up going somewhere else. But I also think Atlanta would be smart to keep him because the backups have become a lot more valuable because they're starting a lot more games than they have perhaps, you know, 5-10 years ago.
You think that could happen with the makeup of the salary cap, with him making $50-plus million in this day and age?
Well, I think that the salary cap we've seen is elastic and nebulous and fungible. So, yeah, well, I think if someone wants to make it happen, they can. I don't necessarily think they will. I don't think bringing in a guy like Cousins at that money with that risk is worthwhile.
Now, I'm just saying in Atlanta. You say he possibly will stay
there.
Yeah,
I mean, no. But again, you know, if Penix doesn't work out, what's your plan B? Like, if you have any sort of aspirations to be, you know, okay-ish, you know, even with Penix, I'm not sure that's going to happen. But, you know, as an organization, I guess you have to make a decision of, if this doesn't work out, do we want to be competitive, or are we going to be in the QB market again with a top pick? You know, that's all questions that you got to ask. But I think, in a vacuum, a guy like Kirk Cousins is probably pretty valuable in today's NFL, even as a backup.
Well, dude, I also think if they were to move Kirk, Atlanta eats a lot of the deal. I think that's how you move Kirk, or it becomes a straight salary dump, and some team that has the space takes him on and they only have to give up like a seventh for a quarterback like Kurt. We don't see this all that often, but like it feels like that's where it heads with Kirk. I don't know. But am I crazy to kind of like the Panthers this year? I said this to Brian, and I said it to the Falcons reporter we were talking with. And, you know, the Bucs have done so well in that division for so long. And deep down, I'm a Bryce Young truther, and maybe that's my problem. But I don't know. There's always a surprise team. Have you looked around and seen a possible surprise team?
I do. And I've actually, full disclosure, I've bet – Tampa Bay to win that division at plus 110 because I think they're the only above average team in the division based on what we know right now. However, I do think that Bryce Young is on an upward trajectory that we're not talking enough about. You look at his expected points added per dropback over the past two seasons and you look at that trend and where it's going, it is not on the rise. It is like spiking up. So I think he is figuring it out. I think the team needs to figure it out with him. They obviously need some talent there. But I think, you know, we talked about this before, right? Having a capable quarterback can solve a lot of issues. So, yeah, if I'm not going to be leaning towards Tampa Bay in that division, I absolutely will be leaning towards the Carolina Panthers to surprise, based largely because I think Bryce Young is going to be a really good quarterback in this league for a long time.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe it's just a win total bet, and just thinking. I imagine their win total's 6.5 or 6 or something. Like,
yeah, they're not expected to be very good.
Right. That'll be interesting to watch. Real quick, I'm rooting for Edmonton. It sure feels like we're gonna get an Edmonton Florida rematch in the Stanley Cup Finals. Does that sound right to you, or do you think one of these?
It does. I mean, I don't think we're breaking ground there. I do think though. Having Edmonton in the Stanley Cup Finals is huge for the league, and not that he necessarily needs it, but it really does add some credibility to Connor McDavid because a lot of people feel like, you know, not making it that far, not winning a Stanley Cup somehow delegitimizes your individual contributions to the sport. So, yes, I absolutely think having Edmonton in there is going to be fantastic for the NHL. And a complete opposite of what we were talking about the NBA in terms of market share, like all of Canada will be watching these NHL finals.
Totally. I think everybody will root for McDavid especially, you know. Hard not to, especially Florida just got a cup last year. I think that'll be a knockdown all-out war of a series. Greenberg, man, we appreciate you making time for us every week.
All right, love you. I'll talk to you next week.
I agree. Take care, brother.
All right, that's our boy, Neil Greenberg. You can follow him at N Greenberg or check out his work in the Washington Post. Greenberg joins us via the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. That would be rude. When we come back, a little bit of baseball, because one thing I love about Mike Rizzo is he will respond to the critics. The Nationals haven't drafted and developed well. Obviously, Mike Rizzo's what he got back for the Soto trade was phenomenal. I mean, you've got three likely, over the course of their career, all-stars for one dude, all under team control, all that stuff. But, you know, a lot of people want to hear about Elijah Green, right? There's these draft picks that just haven't really hit. We'll see if maybe Hassel hits. There's a lot of guys down in the minors. Apparently, you know, they're on the upswing, but so Ken Rosenthal's probably a Schefter equivalent in baseball. I mean, he's
somewhat.
He's always wearing that bow tie. But, I mean, he wields a big stick when it comes to baseball analysis. He writes for The Athletic, and I think he does TV for Fox. I hope I'm not wrong about that. Rosenthal wrote a column, Nationals remain among MLB's bottom feeders despite lengthy rebuild. I'm going to read a little bit of this. When identifying baseball's perennial bottom feeders, the Colorado Rockies come immediately to mind, with the Pittsburgh Pirates, Chicago White Sox, and Miami Marlins also in the conversation. The Washington Nationals belong, too. Since winning the 2019 World Series, the Nationals ranked third in the majors in losses, one behind the Pirates, 14 behind the Rockies. At 24-29 this season, they're on pace to avoid their fifth straight 90-loss campaign, barely. Ownership's lack of investment is partly to blame. The Nationals opened with a top 10 payroll 7 out of 8 seasons between 14 and 21, but in the past 3 years have averaged in the bottom 10. A perhaps even bigger problem is the team's failures in player development, as well as amateur and international scouting going back more than a decade. Failures that President of Baseball Operations Mike Rizzo's spectacular return for Juan Soto at the 2022 trade deadline can mask only so much. Good teams both spend and develop. The Nationals do neither. All right. Some strong language there.
I understand that. But I think the blame goes more to the people that control the money than they do to the guy that makes the decision.
I think our stance is pretty damn clear on that. You will not hear Rizzo slander on this program. I think he's great at what he does. I think the baseball draft is a bigger crapshoot than any of them. Mm-hmm. One thing I take great, I think is a really, I don't want to say dishonest, but a misrepresentation of facts. To say the Nats opened with a top 10 payroll in 7 out of 8 seasons between 14 and 21, but in the past 3 years have averaged in the bottom 10, that's accurate. But year after year after year, they were letting stars walk away.
Yeah.
Young stars that they drafted, they developed, they let them go.
Yeah.
That is different than just spending and not spending.
Didn't they develop Juan?
Certainly.
Didn't they develop Bryce?
Yeah.
So
Trey Turner?
Yeah, and then with Steve Strasburg was damn good.
Unfortunately, they just kept – that was the one dude they kept paying. Rendon, they let go.
So to say that they don't draft well and develop is a lie because those guys are on other teams and they were developed on this team.
They traded for Turner but developed him. They drafted Bryce. They signed – I think – with international guys, it might be different that you sign them rather than draft them. But I just think it's a little disingenuous to just say, oh, they used to spend, now they don't. They also let their own guys walk. And at least Rizzo had the balls to tell the Learners, yo, we got to trade Soto because I know you're just going to let him walk. Yeah. Like if they had traded – here's the reality. If they had traded Turner and Harper and Rendon, they would have had a way better farm system.
Yeah.
Like, but they were trying to chase a title. Then the Learners pulled the plug on spending.
Yeah.
So I think that is a very, very relevant facet in all this. But let's let Mike speak for himself. Mike Rizzo on with the Junkies this morning, number 2 landfill, where he directly addresses the Rosenthal column.
I mean, ownership is shown that when they feel that we're ready to win, they spend. And I've never had a problem with that. Hopefully that continues. And I think that the day's coming that we're going to be in a position to win and to show support. That means buying some free agents and that type of thing. But it's also we went for it in a different way back in the first rebuild. And let us not forget we've done this before. Ken and the other journalists can point out the flaws of how we're doing this rebuild. It's taking too long and that type of thing. But the one thing they can point to us and not point to hardly any other teams around is we've rebuilt from the bottom up when MLB owned this thing to winning a championship, and we did it in 13 years from start to a championship. And we're, unfortunately had to rebuild again, and we're rebuilding now. It's taken, it's since the Soto trade, it's been 2-3 years of a rebuild, which is painful, and we all know that. But if Ken or anybody else can't see where this organization is as far as talent base and that type of thing, then I don't know what to tell anybody. That's the fans see it, the players see it, the opposition team sees it, and they see the talent and that type of thing.
Like what I take from that, now I'm with Rizzo, but the problem is you don't build a team one way, okay? There are a lot of teams in all sports that may go with nothing but free agents and trades. There are teams that only really care about the draft. The great ones do it. They do a little bit of each. He's done that. He's built it. But when you're handcuffed by your ownership, that's going to be a problem. And when you say, oh, they don't draft and whatever, well, when I get the chance to go draft somebody and they build up to become a Soto or a Harper, and then we want to keep them around, and ownership say, nah, we're not going to pay them. I got to let them go. other people, other stars look at it and say, I'm not signing with that team. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's easy to just narrow it down to one thing if that was the only way that people built teams. But you build teams by more than just draft. It may be the best way to do it, but it's probably the toughest way to get it done, especially in baseball.
Well, and because they were good for a while, a lot of those draft picks were not top tens. They were kind of middle of the road. Yeah. Rizzo defended his draft record as well. This is Rizzo number one, Landini.
Picking, you know, you could pick at certain draft choices and picks and that type of thing over the last years, and you could find some faults there. But when I look at we've run some of the the great players in the game through our system. We've drafted some of the great players ever. We've drafted guys low in the draft that have won Cy Youngs and that type of thing. So there's. I just thought the timing of the article was odd because we were playing good and we really are seeing the fruits of this frustrating rebuild come into fruition. But I'm still optimistic. The needle of this team and this organization is pointed north, and it's going to continue to do so until we start winning championships, which I think is in the very near future.
I hope he's correct. I don't think he'll be proven correct until ownership spends money again. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough, but I think when you get a national guy writing something like this, mm-hmm. I at times wonder kind of where
it came from,
just where the push came from. You know what I mean? Like, oh, if you look at the Nats right now,
people begin to knock the Nats for not spending, and we know one thing. A lot of writers don't want to piss off ownership.
Dude, to possibly equate the Rockies with the Nats right now, the Nats are 6 games below 500. Okay, they're 24 and 30. The Rockies are 9 and 46. Like, is that really worth, pointing out similarities over the last 4 or 5 years? Not only that, but the Rockies have looked far more haphazard in whatever it is they're doing. Mm-hmm. It seems oddly direct. It's like I pointed out when there was that.
It was like a hit job.
The first article I saw, I think it was Mike Silver out in San Francisco, pointing out how Kyle Shanahan was the one that wanted to sign him, Brandon Ayuk, and that the front office wasn't exactly sure. Like, whenever you start to see those types of articles where there's a little bit of a fracture, mm-hmm. you wonder who or what is behind it.
Who started it?
And I firmly will stand on this flag. Rizzo is not the problem. Rizzo is the answer. He's proven it. There's a proven track record. And I just, if you want to be frustrated that the team stinks and has for a while now, not incorrect. I think pointing those arrows at Mike Rizzo is incredibly inaccurate. Nobody go anywhere. You'll hear from Cliff Kingsbury at noon. Be Mitch Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Coming up in a few minutes, you'll hear from Cliff Kingsbury. I thought he had a pretty awesome presser, honestly. Not worried if players start cussing each other out. Lanville, you're the seam head of the program. I did want to let you react to Ken Rosenthal and then kind of what Mike Rizzo's response was. Because I just think if you view what has happened with the Nats as anything but ownership's inability to spend money or unwillingness to spend money, I think you're just creating your own fan fiction.
To me it seemed like a hit piece from Rosenthal. I think it's pretty obvious that the reason the Nats are bad is that the owners just aren't willing to put the money into the team. They weren't re-signing guys. The one guy they did re-sign was, unfortunately had a career-ending injury. And then they're just not going out and signing free agents. And obviously when you're, I think, what did they spend? $5 million on a free agent and they deferred some of the money. When you're in a situation like that, obviously your team's just not going to be very good. And despite that, though, they have some of the most exciting young players in the sport. So, I don't know. I think they're doing kind of well.
I agree with you that, Landy.
I totally agree. Like, writing the hit piece now with James Wood ripping the cover off the ball. He had another home run last night. Like, it just it doesn't track to me.
See, the thing, it immediately makes you wonder who can benefit from Rizzo. People questioning him. No, who on the team can benefit? Owners? Nobody else can.
Maybe agents that are
that
mad they're not spending the money.
But a hit piece on him would not be the right thing because he don't control the money. Yeah, I might be able to talk to you and negotiate with you, but I have to go to them to get approval and confirmation that I can spend this.
Right.
You know, one of the criticisms was that the Nats weren't drafting particularly well. And, okay, they didn't draft James Wood, but they went out and acquired him. Like, when it came time to trade Soto, there were multiple offers, and they specifically said, we want that one because it's got the players that we want. You know, they clearly scouted well, and they went out and made it happen. And, by the way, it's not like right. That guy was a major leaguer when they traded for him. It still took a little while to get him to the bigs. So, to me, that's development.
Right. Like,
see, that's what I was trying to say earlier, Landy. Like, you don't just draft players to build a team. You do it in free agent signings, you do trades, you do draft. So if I go out and trade for a player, then I don't have to really draft one this year because I got this unbelievable player who's already ahead of the game.
Right.
So why do I have to go draft this particular person? But my history tells you, we damn sure develop people. And I know somebody that say, well, Bryce was developing when he got here. No, he still had to learn. And he became a damn good one.
Right. And, like, is anybody upset that they didn't draft Trey Turner, but they traded for him? Like, it's just I feel like there's just fatigue on the Nats not being good. And people – honestly, we saw it here. And I'm not comparing the Lerners and Dan Snyder. I'm not comparing that. Obviously, the off-field world is incredibly, incredibly different. But we saw it out here in Ashburn that, like, eventually people got so tired of Bruce Allen that they were able to jump on board with Ron Rivera. Like people just give themselves fatigue of losing, and they look for something that can change, and they don't think ownership can change. So for some, maybe they're looking at Rizzo. I think it would be incredibly foolish, short-sighted, all of the things. Mike Rizzo is the best general manager in Washington, D.C. since Bobby Bethard. And maybe Adam Peters is going to make a run at him. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Rizzo's the reason. Honestly, the Rockies are 9-30, whatever I said they are. Rizzo's probably the reason this team will finish the year flirting with 80 wins. Yeah. 75-80 wins. Yeah. And I'm just – I don't know. I just found this so stupid and – disingenuous, man. I think it goes down a disingenuous path. One dude that did not go down any sort of disingenuous path, Cliff Kingsbury, spoke with the media earlier, and Cliff ain't worried. You'll hear from him next.